The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
2018, we're 2 years into the Donald Trump presidency. Much that subsequently emerged, like the January 6th insurrection, like the revelations in respect of Stormy Daniels, like the felony convictions, many of those things hadn't yet occurred. And the White House Correspondents' Dinner happened. Michelle Wolf, comedian, did a 19-minute monologue that was funny, very funny, but also quite the polemic. And it's worth sort of picturing it. She's standing at a podium and there's a person to her left. So as you're looking at it, it'd be on the right. And the next person is Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the then White House press secretary. The reason this is notable is because having had a fairly searing take on US media in a room full of US media, US politics in a room full of US politicians, she had something of a go at Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who was directly beside her.
I actually really like Sarah. I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts and then she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Like, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's lies. It's probably lies.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders' reaction is it's something to witness in the footage. Michelle Wolf, of course, then went on to work on The Daily Show. She went on to have a number of hugely successful Netflix specials. And she is currently, I am told, in Cork, getting ready to do the comedy festival in Galway. Michelle, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you?
I am very good. And by the way, if you want tickets for the shows, Cork, Drogheda, Dundalk and Dublin, michelleisawolf.com is where you can get them. Before we get to the White House Correspondents' Dinner and the Netflix thing, you managed to find yourself a job in, of all places, Bear Stearns in 2008. How did that work out?
I mean, Bear Stearns, if you don't remember it, it's the first bank to fail. Everyone said all these banks were too big to fail, but Bear Stearns was like, we can do it. So about 6 months after I started working there, it collapsed and got built or bought by JP Morgan. So
did you get bought with it into JP Morgan, or were you one of those people with the cardboard box that we saw on the television?
I actually got bought within it, but I was, you know, I was young and cheap labor, you know? So, I kind of got swallowed up, but man, was that a depressing time. Just it's never good to see older people lose their jobs and have to carry a very sad box outside onto the New York City streets.
And what, from your own perspective as well, I assume, even though you may be young and cheap labor, you must find yourself looking, thinking, I thought I was 4 years away from $1 million bonuses. My prospects are significantly different now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you know, you move to New York with that dream of, like, especially when you work in, you know, on Wall Street, you're like, oh, yeah, maybe I'll have you're wearing the power suits and the all that, you know, the heels and the and you like you hear about all these stories about getting these large, large bonuses. And then within 6 months, they're like, actually, our value is only $2 a share.
Now, the logical thing, of course, to do in this situation when you want to find your way back into successful, guaranteed, reliable, high-paying careers is comedy.
Of course, yeah. There's a natural path.
You were doing, were you doing bits of sort of improv on the side, were you, when you were working in Bear Stearns? Or was it afterwards that you got into it?
No, like about the same time the bank started to collapse is actually I started taking improv classes and I just fell in love with it. And it was, you know, it's one of those things that work was incredibly stressful. And then I would go and I'd do improv and it was so much fun. And I just tried to do more and more of that, which was very hard because it's a very full-time job. So it was quite a lot to balance. And I also used to do improv in my like suit with my heels. And I can't imagine now.
Well, nothing wins over a crowd like seeing an investment banker walk on stage.
Oh yeah. It's everyone's favorite person.
So at what point then?
Someone who's about to steal your money, you know?
How do you know when it's beginning to work? Because obviously there comes a point where you make the decision that says investment banking ain't for me. I'm going this way. When was that inflection point?
Well, I actually had a really cool opportunity to work for this tech company that they hired people that had quote unquote alternative agendas, which essentially just meant that you were overqualified for the job they were hiring you for, but you were pursuing something outside of work. And That's exactly what I was doing. I had no idea this job even existed. And, you know, I was essentially like an admin. And then I would, you know, go and I'd do stand up and improv at night. And eventually someone else that had my same job got fired or left. They actually left to go to medical school. And then they just were like, instead of hiring someone else, we're just going to have you do both jobs. And that became too much work for, you know, the whole alternative agenda thing. So I did less and less work until they fired me. And the great part about that is that I got like about a year's worth severance pay. So within that year, I was like, well, it's either now or never. And I mean, I really pounded the pavement. And at the end of the year, I got hired at Late Night with Seth Meyers.
And of course, that was 14. So about 4 years after that, you find yourself offered the gig at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Now, it's up there on YouTube for everybody. I realize you're probably sick of talking because for you, it's a long time ago, but it has to be said, to go into the belly of the beast and to turn around to media and say, you built this, you created it, you profited off it, and you continue to profit off it, to be searing about both political parties and to have a go at the White House press secretary while she is directly beside you. In writing the gags, at any point did you think, maybe I should just do gentle funny and take the money?
No, I mean, first of all, there was no money. There was no money. So it was either go all in or don't do it.
They don't pay you for that?
No, they give you like a small stipend for like, you know, a hotel. And yeah, it's a no money gig. But you know, to be honest, saying all that stuff in front of all those people that was great. It felt really nice to be able to do that. You know, like, yeah, you can say it behind their back all they want, but to their faces, just to feel them squirm. I remember right before I got, way before I started talking, I got a text from a friend and he was like, remember, if they're silent, you're doing well. And, they were pretty silent for a lot of it. I think they were not expecting me to do what I did.
Oh, it's not just that they're silent. When they do the cutaway shots, what's interesting is who is silent? Because you'll have a table of eight, there'll be two or three people rolling in laughter, and then there's just eyes of hatred gazing at you through. Did you have no? Because I was watching
a friend of mine. A friend of mine said that they saw someone laughing, and then their partner that they were there with, like told them to stop laughing.
So what was the effect of that on your career? Because we've seen a number of instances. I mean, I was talking to the two producers of the New Apprentice movie, and they were saying how difficult it was to get distributors in the US because of a genuine fear that if a distributor got attached to the project and a Republican administration came in, that there might be vengeance. Did you get any of that?
I mean, I honestly was more reporters that were angry with me than, I mean, I think the administration was also angry, but like it seemed to be the US media that was more like mad that they got called out on, you know, doing exactly what they're doing. And I think there was some blowback, but overall, I think it was beneficial. So, you know, I hate the US media. I hate the news media. I think they do a huge disservice to the American public on a daily basis. It's not like it's really... Everyone's talking about how hard it is to find factual information, and they're part of the problem because it's all opinions and conjecture, and you know and it's all for profit for them at a great disservice to us.
So, in the face of this, you made the sensible decision to move to Barcelona.
Well, that wasn't why, but I do reside part time in Barcelona now, which. I don't know. I don't speak Spanish well enough to follow their news broadcast, but I assume things are going okay in Spain as long as they keep the siesta. So I'll start to worry once they're like, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to nap in the middle of the day. Then I'll be like, all right, things have gotten bad.
You explain your reason for moving to Barcelona in one of your stand-up specials where you open it by saying that as a strong, independent career woman, you decided to move to Barcelona for a guy?
Yes, for a boy. Yeah, yeah.
Am I allowed to ask, is that all still going well?
Yes, it's good. Great. It's absolutely great. Yeah. And also, I mean, a lovely city. And you know, a great place to, it's nice to be in Barcelona where it's sunny all the time. So that when I do come to Ireland, I'm like, oh, it's nice to see clouds.
Oh, well, brace yourself for tomorrow. Have you seen the weather forecast for what you're facing tomorrow?
I've heard there's an orange warning, which I was also alerted to what that was. And yeah, we're going to hopefully hunker down and not get blown off the road.
Yeah, we don't do spectacular weather, but it's that line about the Inuit having 956 words for snow. We have the same thing with rain. You know, the forest gum thing where it comes up at you, it's sideways, it hangs in the air. You'll see all sorts of rain in the next while. So you're going to be playing Cork, Drogheda, Dundalk, Dublin. Is this your first time playing to an Irish crowd?
I've played in Dublin several times, but I haven't been to the rest of the country. And so it's my first time playing outside of Dublin.
How do you find the Irish crowds? Because a man that I know that you've dealt with on podcast a couple of times, Bill Burr, he describes the Irish audience as unique. Is he right?
I think they are a bit unique, but I actually like, I feel like, you know what? I feel like they know when you're not confident. Like they can sniff it out of you. And so it's not like your jokes, they can work or not work, but if you're not confident, they'll kind of lose interest in you is my general feeling. So you got to go up there and just, and they love to take the piss. You know, I think it's a fun relationship to have with the audience. And I've really enjoyed it in the shows we've done so far.
Well, that was Bill Burr's line. He said that he has a line that he does everywhere in one of his stand-ups where he did a thing of, you know, I didn't get a lot of affection growing up as a kid. And it's just a lead line into the rest of the gag. And he said, uniquely in Ireland, whenever he does it, the crowd goes, aww. So how long are you going to be staying with us before you head back off? And will any of this make your next special? And when are we going to get your next special?
Well, I'm actually doing, like, I'm trying to come up with as much, like, Irish material while I'm here as possible. And I'm trying to do like 10 to 15 minutes of just like, you know, stuff I've written since I've been here, been inspired to write because of being here. And I'm hopefully going to be able to release that. I'll film it when we play Dublin on the 29th. And I will hopefully release that online shortly after.
Oh, so where are you playing in Dublin?
Go
on. Let's hear it.
Uh-huh. Where is it?
Are your people scurrying in the background?
No, my gosh. The only people in the room is the baby. And I don't think she knows where anything's being played other than Elmo. Now, where is it in Dublin? We're playing at Liberty Hall. Liberty Hall.
Oh, very nice.
I got it. Yeah.
So we will get
honestly,
to see.
Honestly, I'm impressed I remembered that.
Footage of the, well, given them where you, because you're everywhere. So there's Liberty Hall in Dublin, Spirit Store Dundalk, Prop Room Drogheda, Whale Theatre Greystones, Town Hall in Galway, which unfortunately is sold out, Limelight in Belfast, Cypress Avenue, Cork, and on the day before, the sold out gig in Cypress Avenue. Michelle, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much for taking the time so early.
Thank you so much. It was lovely to talk to you as well.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.